Chapter 21. The sixth brother's return to Raeda had not been as triumphant as he had hoped. He had not been able to make a positive identification of the Jedi, but he was fairly certain that any news of his forthcoming actions on the farming moon would reach the Padawan's attention. He'd tracked a series of happy accidents, happy, that is, for the people who had been saved from run-ins with the Empire. The events had Jedi do-gooding written all over them. Low death count, grateful civilians, and a lack of official records. All he had to do was make sure that someone on Raeda was left to send a distress call in the right direction, and the Jedi would come to him. His first order of business, after he landed and squared away his ship, was to read the situation updates on the insurgents. As he'd suspected, the local troops had made no inroads in capturing them, which suited him just fine. The district commander seemed to be avoiding him, which also suited his purposes, so he called in the chief interrogator instead. "I require information on the girl who escaped your custody," he said, cutting straight to the chase. Interrogators usually appreciated the direct approach, which was something he admired about them. Her appearance, preferably, not her character. "She had dark skin," the interrogator said, "and her hair was in braids when I saw her. But unless she's found someone to redo them, I imagine she'll be wearing a scarf or something now." "Why couldn't she fix them herself?" the Inquisitor asked. "Her arm is broken," was the reply. "The right. I think there may also be damage to her shoulder, but I couldn't be sure."
"Are your methods so callous?"
It was always nice to trade professional information. "No, the arm was an accident," the interrogator said. "Our initial torture scared her so badly that when I mentioned the possibility of revisiting it, she knocked herself over and pinned the arm under her chair."
"You have been most helpful," the Inquisitor said. "You're dismissed."
The interrogator was smart enough not to take umbrage at someone with no discernible rank issuing orders. That sort of person was likely to do well in the Imperial hierarchy, which required a certain amount of flexibility. The sixth brother made a note to write a commendation. His job, and the jobs of his brothers and sisters, would be easier if the upper ranks were populated by people who listened to them. Alone, the Inquisitor called up the map of the moon's surface to refresh his memory of the geography. It took him only a few moments to identify the best places to hide a large group of people, and then he closed the terminal and headed for the door. It was time to stop asking questions and go hunting. Kaden had played, in her estimation, approximately 10 billion games of Krokan since Ahsoka had rescued her and left Raeda. It had been Miara's suggestion. With a broken arm and limited medical options, Kaden needed to learn to use her other hand, and Krokan was the easiest way to do that. She played with her sister frequently, but her most common opponent was Neera. Once the sedatives had worn off, Neera had shambled around the cave like part of her was missing, and Kaden thought that wasn't far from the truth. The only time Neera showed any spark was when they played. Neera always trounced her, but if it made her feel better, then Kaden was happy to lose. Aside from the board game and the ability to take herself to the bathroom, living in hiding from the Empire was not all that different from being imprisoned by it. The food was terrible. The lighting was bad. She was nervous and jumpy, startling at every sound. But there were no torture machines, so at least she had that going for her. And her sister was with her, and safe, mostly, so she had that, too. Reaching up with her good hand, Kaden readjusted the scarf she was using to contain her hair. Her usual braids had fared about as well under torture as she had, and she hadn't been able to fix them one-handed. Miara had given it her best shot, but despite her ability to make tiny circuits that could explode when properly triggered, Miara had no gift for braiding. Kaden ended up taking them out entirely
and then had to do her best to deal with the bushy volume hanging loose. She should probably have cut it, but she knew her arm would get better eventually, and she liked the long braids. She could be patient. Or she could be patient with her hair, at least. Being patient while they hid out from the Empire was an entirely different matter. No one talked about it, because it felt too much like speaking ill of the dead. But Caden could tell that even the most hot-headed of them was wishing they'd never listened to Hoban. As their supplies ran low, there was talk of who should go into town for more, and arguments about whether or not they should just try to leave the planet altogether.
"Do you think it's strange that the Imperials haven't found us yet?" Miara said.
She sat down beside Caden, who was flicking croquet pieces at the center of the board. Her aim was getting better, but not by much.
"We did take out the walkers before things went sideways," Caden said. "But you're right. They have to know there are only so many places we could hide. Even the densest stormtroopers should have checked here by now." "What do you think they're waiting for?" Miara asked.
"I think they're busy looking for something else," Caden said.
"It's not like we're a threat to them."
"But Ahsoka's gone," Miara said.
"She said she'd come back," Caden reminded her.
She'd said it 100 times if she'd said it once, and every time, a little more of her surety died. Miara looked at her witheringly. It was an old look for a young face, and Caden didn't like it.
"Why would she come back?" Miara asked. "There's nothing here."
"There's us," Caden said, ignoring Miara's implication that Caden believed Ahsoka would return solely on her account. "She might come back for us."
"Her and what army?" Miara asked. "Or would you leave everyone else behind to save yourself?"
Caden couldn't say it. Couldn't see the look of disgust she knew her sister would give her if she did. But the truth was that she would leave Ra'eda in a heartbeat if she could. If it would save her, or Miara, from ever feeling that machine on her chest again. She would do it. Guilt was a long pain, but it was survivable. She wasn't sure how long she'd hold up if she was tortured again.
"Stop that," Miara said, and Caden realized she was rubbing her chest.
The machine hadn't even left a mark. All Miara could see was that Caden was twitchy and constantly scared. At least no one accused her of being lovesick, even when they might have needed a laugh. Neera sat down opposite Caden, across the croquet board, and began dividing the discs by color. She never asked if Caden wanted to play. She didn't do much talking at all anymore, so this was how their games usually began. Caden was preparing to lose spectacularly again when Colvin, who was on sentry duty, crawled out of the connecting tunnel, an alarmed expression on his face.
"There's something coming," he said.
"Stormtroopers?" Caden asked. "In the tanks?"
With the walkers out of commission, the tanks were the only ground transport option the Imperials had. They were slow and lumbering and didn't do well in hills, but stormtroopers didn't seem overly fond of walking.
"No," Colvin said. "Just one person, but moving really fast. They'll be here soon."
The main entrance was always locked. They'd spent time increasing the camouflage around the hidden entrances. It was one of the few activities they could manage safely without attracting attention. The weak point in their defense was the sentry door. They had to decide if they wanted to collapse it and lose their vantage point permanently, or risk leaving it open. For Caden, it wasn't a hard choice at all, but she wasn't the one issuing orders. Everyone looked at Miara. She wasn't in command either. No one really was. But the charges were her design. If they were going to be set off, she was the one to do it.
"It'll take me a few moments to get everything ready," Miara said. "Colvin, do we have that kind of time?"
"We do if we go now," he said. His wide black eyes gleamed, even in the dim of the cave.
"I'm coming with you," Caden said.
Miara paused.
"You can't crawl yet," she said, "and you can't help with the charges."
"I don't want us to be separated," Caden insisted.
"Then let me go so I can come back in a hurry," Miara said.
"Your sister's right," Neera said. "They can kill one of you together as easily as they can apart. You might as well stay here and play croquet with me. It's your turn anyway."
Caden gaped at her, shocked
that even in grief, Neera could say something so awful. Miara took advantage of her sister's distraction and dove into the tunnel with Colvin on her heels. Time seemed to stretch out forever, but then the ground shook slightly, and Kaden knew that the sentry point had been taken care of. She wished she'd gotten a look at the approaching figure. She didn't like not knowing what was coming for them. Neera tapped her on the injured shoulder, and she winced. The older girl gestured to the board. "It's your turn, Kaden," she said, as though they were sitting at Zelda's at the end of their shift. Kaden picked up a disc and debated her next shot. Jeneth Pilar was packing. There was no rhyme or reason to the Empire once Force Wielders got involved. Every one of his painstaking calculations was ignored, and all his formulae were unbalanced by the very presence of such mythology, and he had no more patience for it. The one who called himself the Sixth Brother was back, and that meant that all Jeneth's well-planned methodologies were about to be jettisoned in favor of some scheme involving a so-called Jedi. Everyone knew the Jedi were dead. So far from the core, there were few people who had any faith in the Jedi Order at all. Jeneth didn't admire much about the Outer Rim, but he could respect that. The Force had no place in an ordered galaxy. It simply couldn't be accounted for in the math. He paused, looking around his quarters for anything he might have forgotten. His eyes fell on the datapad he'd used to calculate exactly how much of what the Empire needed could be extracted from the moon's surface before destroying it for future generations. All that fuss for a plant. Just a simple plant that could be processed into a nutritional supplement that allowed people working in low gravity to process oxygen more efficiently. He couldn't imagine it was worth the trouble the Empire had gone to in order to procure it. He threw the datapad into his case and shut the latches. It was hardly his problem. He'd been paid, and he'd seen the job along as far as he could before it got out of his control. There was no reason for the Imperials to think he'd slighted them, and there was no reason for him to stay on the benighted moon a moment longer. He was going back to a planet with real trees, real food, a real bed, and no lingering smell of fertilizer. In the fields, the farmers labored under duress, and the little plants grew taller. A few more days, and the harvest could begin. Chapter 22. In her favor, the armored figure hadn't yet drawn a weapon. They really did want to talk. Ahsoka's own blaster still hung at her side, but she could get to it if she needed to. It didn't matter how quickly the figure could draw and fire. Ahsoka would be faster. Her Jedi-trained reflexes were more than sufficient for that. At the same time, she knew that there was no point in a firefight unless she was provoked. The Black Sun agent had come looking for Ashla, so Ashla could deal with them. "I'm surprised Black Sun has heard of me," Ahsoka said. She relaxed her shoulders, but stayed alert, her eyes scanning the visitor's armor for weaknesses, and her feelings seeking out the surge of aggression that would precipitate a fight.
"My organization keeps watch on this whole sector," the agent said.
The voice modulator made the words difficult to understand. It must have been an old machine. Either this agent was new and couldn't afford good tech yet, or they were seasoned and had had their gear for a while.
"We tend to notice when our business ventures go awry."
Business ventures was not the term Ahsoka would have used. She considered all forms of sentient being trafficking abhorrent. She absently calculated how long it would take to get her ship in the air from her starting position at the bottom of the ramp. The freighter wasn't designed for quick takeoffs, but you could generally push a ship to do anything once, and this might be her one time. "Well," she said, "I don't know much about that sort of thing. I'm just a hired pilot."
"My organization is aware of that, too," the agent said. "You're much better than those petty, farty scum. Whatever they're paying you, we'll double it."
You're offering me a job. Ahsoka's voice was flat.
We are,
the agent said.
Lucrative contracts and all the benefits that come with working for such a high-level organization.
Ahsoka almost wished the agent had come in firing.
I had a certain amount of freedom with the Fardies, she said. I doubt your employers would continue to let me be so independent.
There are some limitations they would expect you to accept,
the agent conceded. They shifted, and Ahsoka saw that the knee plating on their armor was cracked. That would be her first target if it came to that.
And there's also the matter of the credits you owe them.
I don't owe anyone anything, Ahsoka said.
Oh, but you do,
the agent said.
You've cost Black Sun thousands of credits, and you'll pay them back one way or another.
This is sounding less and less like a job, Ahsoka said.
Your corpse is also acceptable,
the agent said. Do I get some time to think about it? Ahsoka asked.
Not long,
the agent said.
There will be others searching for you. I'm lucky I found you first.
If Black Sun wanted a smuggler they felt had snubbed them badly enough to send out bounty hunters, then a suspected Jedi would be an even better target. She couldn't reveal herself to this agent any more than she could have to the Imperials back on Thebeska. It would mean more people chasing her, and while she knew she could handle them, she had others to consider. Wherever she set down next would become a target, just by virtue of her presence. She had to be careful. I'm very flattered, she said. But I don't think I'm interested. To their credit, the Black Sun agent didn't hesitate, but they were still too slow. Ahsoka was halfway up the ramp of her ship before the first salvo blaster shot sounded, and closing the door before the second round. The agent could have charged the ramp, but chose instead to retreat back to their own ship. It seemed they now had fewer qualms about shooting her, and were going to try to take her in the air. There was good reason for this. The freighter was bulky and hadn't been designed for speed. The agent's vessel was sleek and vicious, a predator in ship's clothing. Ahsoka was going to have her work cut out for her. She started the takeoff sequence before she even had the hatch shut. As soon as she was airborne, she turned around. Looking down, she saw the agent running up the ramp of their own vessel. The ship's guns were powerful, but would fire slowly. All she had to do was avoid a direct hit. Easy as anything, she said. She fired the engines, putting as much distance between her and the Black Sun agent as she could while they were still ascending. Maybe they would be a terrible pilot and this would be easy. Or maybe not, she said as the agent's ship closed the gap on hers. She gave the engines more fuel and took the ship down toward the mountain peaks. She'd have to lose her pursuer that way. A flurry of stone erupted on her port side as the agent's artillery laid waste to a mountainside. She dodged the rubble and flew lower, trying to force them to fly down after her. Cloud cover would be very handy, she said to no one in particular. Even R2-D2 couldn't control the weather. She spotted a peak and swung around it, banking so hard that the metal around her screamed with exertion. It was worth it, however, because for a few precious seconds, the Black Sun vessel crossed into her line of fire. She didn't waste the opportunity. Her guns fired much more rapidly than theirs did. Shorter bursts and less concentrated power, but still effective. One of their cannons was disabled by the time she finished her pass, and they had to turn around to follow her. She used the time, brief though it was, to start her computer's hyperspace calculation. There was no point in sticking around any longer. So much for a few days to clear her head. As she continued to evade the agent, though, she realized that her head did feel clear. For better or worse, she had made a choice. She'd chosen to protect the friend she had, and the friend she might yet make by concealing her identity once again, even though it made her escape more complicated. Choosing, even under pressure, had made her see that she was capable of deciding on the fly. She'd been right to reveal herself on Ra'eda, even though it had led to problems. And she'd been right to conceal herself on Thebeska. There was no one way forward for her anymore. She would have to make decisions like that over and over again. But it was always going to be her, Ahsoka Tano. She was ready to put Ashla away for good, even though she didn't know exactly who the new Ahsoka was going to be just yet. She'd have to write Black Sun a thank you note. Or maybe not, she said, as the agent successfully targeted her starboard engine. She was going to be much slower now, if that smoke was any indication. At least her hyperdrive was still online. She pulled her ship around. It was time for drastic measures. The other ship was careening toward her. The agent either hadn't noticed her direction change, or didn't care that they were about to ram her. Ahsoka fired everything she had, landing almost all her shots, but they didn't deviate from their course. She screamed, wrenching the helm sideways, so her ship went spinning out of the path of the other vessel. It took her a few moments to regain equilibrium, both the ships and her stomachs. And by then, the agent was coming about for another pass at the same speed. Both of the agent's engine manifolds were smoking greasy black stuff that looked as terrible as Ahsoka knew it would smell. Her starboard engine was almost stalled. It would be only a matter of time until it gave out completely, and she'd be unable to run. Come on! Come on! She said to the Navi computer. In that moment, several things happened. The first was that her starboard engine failed, and she began to spin out of control. The second was that the Black Sun agent pulled up as though they wanted to watch her crash from a distance. The third was that there was another ship in the sky with them, and it was much bigger than hers. Ahsoka saw it only in flashes as she spun. It was a new ship, shiny hull fitted with state-of-the-art cannons. There were markings on it, but she couldn't make them out. What she could make out was that the ship wasn't targeting her. It was targeting the Black Sun vessel. Under onslaught from a ship that size, the sleek little craft didn't stand a chance. The agent must have known it, because they turned tail and fled after the first salvo. Ahsoka used the reprieve to stop her ship from spinning out. She leveled off just above the treetops and began the climb back up, trying to break orbit and get away so that she could make the jump to light speed. It was slow going with only one engine, and she had to use her full strength to hold the ship on course. Between that and her fading adrenaline, she couldn't locate the bigger ship. She tried to see it on her scanners, but steering required too much of her concentration. Just a little more, she said. Just a little more. She broke into space and killed the port engine before it could burn out too. Out of the planet's gravity and atmosphere, she was able to relax a little bit and use the thrusters to maintain stability while her inertia carried her toward a location where she'd be able to make the jump. About that hyperdrive, she said, turning to the Navi computer and preparing the manual parts of the calculation. Her proximity alarms went berserk. The bigger ship was right on top of her. It must have waited for her to break orbit and then pounced when she paused to catch her breath. Come on! Come on! She said to the computer, but she had a sinking feeling that it was too late. Sure enough, a few seconds later, when the computer beeped and she tried to make the jump to light speed, nothing happened. She was caught in a tractor beam. Chapter 23. Miara went over the circuitry as carefully as their current predicament allowed. Generally speaking, it was not a good idea to rush explosives. Plus, she needed these ones to blow discreetly. It wouldn't do them any good to blast the hillside, only to have whatever was out there follow the explosion back to its source. She kept her head clear and calm and worked with steady hands. Beside her, Colvin was not so patient. Will you stop that? She said, when his fidgeting got to be too much for her slowly fraying nerves. It's getting closer, Miara, Colvin said. I know that, you idiot, she said. But if I rush now, I might blow you up instead. Right, said Colvin. Sorry. Just go stand somewhere else, would you? She requested. You're blocking my light. He gave her some space, and she went back to work. Just another couple of switches, and she'd be ready to go. Fortunately, when she'd first rigged this, she had anticipated a stealth blast would be necessary. Everything was already in place. She just needed to lay the final ignition sequence. "Okay, Colvin, back into the tunnel," she said, closing up the final circuit board. "You're really going to blow me up?" he asked, but he was already moving. "No," she said. "Though it's tempting. It's going to get dusty in here, that's all. Most of this blast is directed downward." Colvin crawled into the tunnel and she followed him. When they were both entirely covered by the lower ceiling, she hit the detonator. There was a quiet rumble beneath them and a louder clamor behind them as the rocks fell inward. They both started coughing. "Go!" she said, sputtering. It was going to take her weeks to get the taste of the smoky crap out of her mouth. Colvin went, and she followed. A few seconds later, they emerged into the main cavern. Caden was still playing croquet with poor Neera, but she got up and walked over as soon as she saw Miara, and started dusting off her sister's back and shoulders as well as she could with one arm.
Hey, cut it out, Miara said, though to be honest, it felt nice to know that Caden was watching out for her.
I'm sorry, Caden said. I just really hate all this waiting, even when we're not split up.
I know, Miara said.
They had never spoken about it, but the night and day Miara had spent waiting for Caden to come back after the raid was the worst time of Miara's life. Even though she'd known logistically that Caden wouldn't be able to return until it got dark, every minute of daylight seemed to taunt her. When she'd heard Ahsoka's ship take off, she'd almost given up and run out onto the hillside screaming like Neera. Colvin had practically sat on her chest until she'd calmed down. When Caden had finally arrived, her hair a mess and her poor arm trailing uselessly at her side, it was hours before Miara was willing to leave her.
I hope Ahsoka does come back, Miara said. I mean, obviously I'd like her to rescue us again, but more important, I want to tell her that I'm sorry.
You have strange priorities, little sister, Caden said. But I guess I already got to apologize.
Yeah, Miara said. I don't really blame her for anything that happened. I know she helped us as much as she could.
They didn't talk about the others, about Vartan and Selda, or any of the rest of the farmers who hadn't been part of the raid. Not knowing was bad, but speculating would only make it worse. They waited. Neera lost interest in the croquet board and started pacing in a corner, muttering under her breath. Colvin went off to check on the vaporator, which had been making strange noises for a few days. The rest of the insurgents checked their weapons, even though nothing had changed since the last time they used them. Anything to keep distracted while they waited to see if the mysterious creature would find them. Then, from outside the cave, there came a very loud voice.
Caden Larty! I know you are in there!
Caden started, jerking her arm painfully. Miara's eyes widened, and everyone in the cave, even Neera, froze.
Come out, Caden Larty! The shouting continued. Surrender, or I will collapse your little hiding spot, and your sister and your friends will die, gasping for air.
Caden was on her feet before Miara could stop her.
What are you doing? Miara said. You can't just go out there.
I can't stay here either, Caden said.
We knew they'd get us somehow, and we knew they wouldn't fight fair when they did. I'm just the name they know, that's all.
He might blow us all up anyway. Neera materialized next to them, her face completely still and her blue eyes focused in a way they hadn't been since her brother died.
Ahsoka picked the escape doors because they have lines of sight with each other, Caden reminded her sister. I'll go out the smallest one, and you can keep watch from the others. Maybe you'll get a clean shot.
If he didn't bring any friends, Colvin said.
Caden Larty, came the voice again. I grow tired of waiting.
Look, just get in position, Caden said. I'm going.
I'm coming too, Miara said. You said it yourself. We shouldn't be separated.
Caden locked eyes with Neera, hoping the older girl would understand. Caden couldn't watch her sister tortured the way she had been. Then she would definitely tell the interrogator everything he wanted to know. Neera nodded and raised her blaster. It was a newer model, stolen from a stormtrooper during the raid, and it had a stun setting. Miara never knew what hit her.
"Tell her I'm sorry," Caden said, and then she was gone. It was difficult to crawl through the connecting tunnel, even though she picked the shortest one. She couldn't put any weight on her right arm, so it was more like dragging herself through the dust. "Fantastic," she thought. "Not only am I about to be captured by Imperials again, but I'm going to be absolutely filthy when they catch me. If they grant me a last request, I'm going to have to ask for a bath." At least her slowness gave the others time to get into position. She studied the creature before she walked out to meet him. He was tall, with broad shoulders, and of a species she had never seen before. His face was gray, and it didn't look like the color was natural. There were other markings, too uniform to be scars, on his cheeks, nose, and chin. They gave his face an evil look, though Caden imagined that without them, and without those piercing, ice-blue eyes, he wouldn't be so intimidating. As it was, he was intimidating enough. He wore a gray uniform, too, but not a typical officer's. There was no rank insignia. It was like he had been designed to be as unremarkable as possible, except for one thing. He held a massive, double-bladed red lightsaber. Somehow, Caden found the courage to keep walking. She stumbled out of the cave, squinting against the brighter light, and stood before him, waiting for him to tell her what to do next. "I'm Caden," she said. "Now leave my friends alone." The gray figure laughed. It was not a pleasant sound.
"But they've all come out to see us off," he said, and reached out a hand.
Caden had seen Ahsoka use the Force twice. The first time when she turned the Imperial blasters away, and the second when she'd rescued Caden by lifting her through the window of the prison cell. This was nothing like that. Caden could almost sense the unnaturalness, the wrongness of it. And then Colvin was dragged out of the cave to her left, clutching at his throat while his knees scraped along the ground.
"Stop!" Caden said. "I surrender! I surrender! Just stop!"
But the gray creature didn't listen. Colvin's struggles grew weaker and weaker as the life was choked out of him, and then everything got even worse. The hillside around Caden erupted in blaster fire as her remaining friends tried to shoot the creature down. They did their best, and they were decent shots, but they didn't come close. The gray creature was more than a match for them, and he was without pity. His lightsaber spun so fast that it looked like a ring of red light instead of a blade, deflecting all the shots back at whoever had fired them. Caden heard the screams as her friends were wounded, and then she heard the silence as they died. When it was quiet again, she realized she was still standing, and Colvin was still fixed in place beside her. He'd stopped struggling, nearly all the light gone out of his massive eyes. She couldn't stop looking at him. Ahsoka had made her look away from death before, but now there was no escape from it.
"This is what happens to those who would resist the Empire," the gray creature said.
He threw his still-spinning lightsaber at Colvin and sliced him in half. Caden screamed, expecting fountains of blood, but both halves of the body thudded cleanly to the ground and did not so much as twitch. The coldness of Colvin's death was almost worse. The lightsaber flew back into the gray creature's hand. He turned it off and stowed it somewhere behind him. Caden didn't even think of trying to steal it. She wouldn't make it three steps.
"What are you?"
Caden asked, surprised she had any voice at all.
"I am the future," the gray creature said. "And the only reason you are alive is because I need you to make my future come to pass."
He grabbed her good arm and forced her to walk in front of him. She thought about resisting, forcing him to kill her there and then with the others so she couldn't be used to further his ends. He had to be after Ahsoka, It was the only reason she could think of that anyone would target her specifically. Ahsoka had already rescued her once. They must want her to try it again. If she died now, then Ahsoka wouldn't have any reason to come back, and Kaden would get to lie in the dust with the rest of her... Miara! Who hadn't wanted to leave her, who was lying unconscious back in the cave, thanks to Neera's quick thinking. Neera, who was dead, but who had saved Miara without even knowing it. Kaden had to live for a little bit longer, so she could get this terrible creature away from her sister. All right, all right! She said, shaking her arm free. It hurt. Her whole body hurt. But she could do this. I can walk on my own.
Excellent, the gray creature said. We want you to be in your best shape for when your little Jedi friend gets here to save you.
He laughed again, cruelly, and pushed Kaden between her shoulder blades. She stumbled, but managed not to fall. She walked back toward the town as quickly as she could, not knowing how long an Imperial stunner would keep Miara out. She was sorry that Miara would wake up to discover the bodies of her friends, particularly Neera's, but at least she'd wake up. She was smart too, Kaden knew. She'd go to Vartan, or Selda, or somewhere else before she tried anything stupid like staging a rescue. As for Ahsoka, she was a Jedi. She'd fought in the Clone Wars, and somehow she'd managed to survive the Jedi Purge when the Empire began. That meant she was resourceful and quick-thinking. She'd know it was a trap. She'd leave Kaden to die, or she'd come prepared to fight. Kaden clung to that hope, as though she had two good arms, grit her teeth against the pain, and kept walking. Chapter 24. The tractor beam seemed to take its time reeling her into the hold. It was almost like whoever had captured Ahsoka wanted her to have time to arm herself and get ready to fight back, which was exactly what she did. She left the blaster where it was, but rummaged through the weapon box that all the Farty ships carried. She'd never gone through hers before now, because she'd never needed to, but there is a first time for everything. She discarded several smaller blasters, a stun rifle, and three explosives whose yields were not clearly marked. At the bottom of the box was a pair of bastons. Not perfect, but they were as close to her former lightsabers as she was going to get. Then she went down to the main hatch and waited. After what felt like forever, the hatch opened. Standing there were two humans, both with helmets covering their faces and with their weapons up. She didn't know if they were the only two people on board, and she didn't wait to find out. She jumped, flipping down the ramp to kick the taller human at the base of his helmet, while striking the shorter one with the baston in her right hand. They were unprepared for the swiftness of her attack. The man dropped immediately, but the shorter one, a woman, managed to dodge the full brunt of the first blow.
Wait, she said. We're here on behalf of...
That was as far as Ahsoka let her get before she dropped the woman with another blow to the helmet. Both of them would wake up, but by then Ahsoka would be gone. First, though, she had to deactivate the tractor beam, and the easiest place to do that was on the bridge. Bastion's at the ready, she prowled through the ship. It was a fairly straight line from the hold to the bridge, but she wanted to be sure no one surprised her. So she took a quick detour to the engine room and the berths on the way. There was no one else on board, which was strange, because the ship could have accommodated many more crew members with no stress on the oxygen recyclers. Maybe her would-be captors just liked their privacy. Ahsoka shrugged and opened the door that led to the bridge. The first thing she noticed was that there were no people here either. The second thing she noticed was the beeping of an astromech droid, one that sounded exactly like R2! She didn't mean to shout at the little droid, but she was so startled and surprised that she couldn't help it. She'd had a very stressful day. The little blue and silver droid disconnected from the console he was working on and rolled across the floor to her so quickly that she thought for a second he might have flown. He was beeping so fast she could barely understand him. But she could tell by his tone that R2-D2 was as happy to see her as she was to see him. "I'm so glad you're okay," she said, dropping to her knees to give the droid a hug. She didn't care if it was a silly thing to do, and R2-D2 seemed to appreciate the gesture. "They didn't even memory wipe you?" The droid beeped happily at her. "You work for a senator? But you're not supposed to tell me who?" she said. The droid had always been good at keeping secrets. "What about your friends in the hold? Can you tell me about them?" R2-D2 rolled back across the floor and called up two holos. They were labeled, and she read the names of the pilot and co-pilot, both of whom she'd left unconscious in the hold of their own ship. "I hope they don't hold a grudge," she said. "Though, really, what do they expect? Capturing people in tractor beams." The astromech chirruped soothingly and went back to stand beside her. She was going to have to leave soon, but she really didn't want to part with the little droid again. "What was their mission anyway?" Ahsoka asked. R2-D2 told her what he was permitted to, specifically that the pilot, Chargery Tage, and his partner, Tamsin, had been tasked with taking her to meet someone. "The same senator you're not supposed to tell me the identity of?" Ahsoka asked. "R2, I need to know." The droid seemed to consider it for a moment, rolling back and forth on his three legs. Then he said a name. "Bail Organa?" Ahsoka said. "I can't believe they let him live. He's a known Jedi sympathizer. He must be in so much danger." R2-D2 beeped that she didn't know the half of it. "And you won't tell me?" Ahsoka said. "I get it." The droid reminded her that Padme Amidala, too, had trusted Bail, not just the Jedi. Ahsoka sighed. "Look, can you release the tractor beam on my ship?" she asked him. "And then I'll escape, and you can tell everyone you never saw me, okay? Just make sure I can track this ship. If I like what I see, then I'll come in. I promise." R2-D2 rolled back and forth for a few moments. The little droid was used to espionage and high stakes. He would understand why Ahsoka wanted to do this under her own power as much as she could. After a moment, he beeped his agreement and told her the code she could use to track the ship. "Thanks, R2, she said. She turned to go, but he rolled over to her again. He made a series of sad sounds. "I know, little guy." Her heart clenched around the empty spot where Anakin Skywalker used to be. "I miss him, too." R2-D2 rolled back to the controls, and Ahsoka saw he was wiping all surveillance of their conversation. Then he beeped farewell to her and activated an electrical circuit that would make it look like she'd shorted him out. It wouldn't fool Bail, so he'd know to expect her if he was paying attention, but it would probably do the trick with the two pilots. Ahsoka didn't waste any more time. She went back to the hold, dragged the pilots to the pressurized area, and then boarded her ship and fired up the engines as much as they would allow in their damaged condition. She slipped out of the cargo bay and scanned around for a good place to hide and make repairs while she waited for the pilots to wake up. In the end, she had to settle for one of the small moons that orbited the planet where she'd fought the Black Sun agent. She hoped they weren't hiding there to mend their ship too, but honestly, she didn't think even her luck today would be that bad. She was nearly done with her repairs by the time the signal from R2 started beeping at her, indicating which way he and the pilots had gone. She watched it as it stuttered, meaning they had entered hyperspace, and then settled back for a nap. She wanted them to have a head start, and she'd need to be rested when she talked to Bail anyway. Floating above some nameless moon, Ahsoka closed her eyes and fell asleep. Bail did his level best not to laugh through the report that Chargery Tage delivered to him. They hadn't even seen the Jedi long enough to give a description of her. She'd taken them out immediately, shorted out the R2 unit, and disabled the tractor beam with no real effort at all. Bail actually felt a little guilty. He hadn't told Tage what he was setting him and Tamsin up against, and apparently the Jedi was as well-trained in combat as any Clone Wars veteran. She'd even scrubbed most of the security footage, but there was one clip she'd overlooked. It was a shot of the engine room. Everything looked in order at first glance, but if he paused at the exact right moment, a pair of Montrals was clearly visible above one of the coils as the Jedi checked to make sure the room was empty. Bail swallowed a shout of pure triumph. He knew those markings. This wasn't just any Jedi. It was Ahsoka Tano, and he had to find her immediately. He paused. Ahsoka would have recognized R2-D2. More important, the astromech would have recognized her. "Why, you little metal devil," Bail said, cursing the absent unit. He couldn't really blame Ahsoka for her caution. He hadn't associated with her as closely as with Skywalker and Kenobi, and she hadn't parted well with anyone when she left Coruscant. Also, he'd sent two people to kidnap her, essentially. She must have a plan, though, and the R2 unit undoubtedly knew what it was. The droid had all but told him to expect her, if not any of the specifics. He recorded a new message to send Tage, giving coordinates to meet, even though they hadn't successfully apprehended the Jedi they were after. Tage didn't reply with the holo, merely sent a confirmation code, but Bail knew his orders would be followed to the letter. Ahsoka Tano would find him, and he'd be ready for her. He didn't know what he would say to her, how much she knew already, and how much she should know. Perhaps it would be for the best if he didn't tell her anything at all. He thought of his daughter, safe on Alderaan, and the boy, safe in the desert. He owed them his silence, but he would do his best to sound out Ahsoka. If she already knew, she would be a valuable ally. He couldn't tell her that Obi-Wan lived, but he could gain her trust in other ways, and he would start by making his invitation in person. He left his quarters on Captain Antilles Tantive IV and made for the bridge. The captain was on duty, so it didn't take long to make his request. Antilles was loyal to a fault and knew better than to ask questions in front of the crew. They were working slowly to replace each crew member with the rebel or recruit the existing crew to the cause, but it was patient, cautious work. As it was, everyone was loyal enough to Alderaan and to Breha specifically to keep secrets. The rest would come in time. It was as safe a place as any to meet a Jedi. The trip through hyperspace was short, and Tage's ship was waiting for them when they arrived. There was no sign of Ahsoka. The system they were in was mostly empty, but there were a few unpopulated planets nearby. Antilles liked to arrange meetings where there were hiding places available if he needed them. They waited for a few hours, with no sign of another ship. Eventually, Bail ordered Tage to return the R2 unit to the blockade runner and go. Perhaps he'd been wrong about Ahsoka's loyalties. Perhaps she was already settled into a new life and didn't want to be embroiled in another war. He couldn't say that he blamed her. Bail saw the R2 unit return to his flighty golden protocol droid companion, who immediately began to berate the little astromech, and then made his way back to his quarters. They were in the center of the ship, accessible by the main corridor. He'd never given much thought to the maintenance shaft that ran behind the row of guest quarters. It provided access to the panels that controlled the environmental systems in each suite, and also connected the bridge to the engine room as an alternate route if something happened to compromise the main passageway. There were several escape pods located there, and one airlock. Bail walked into his temporary office, turned on the lights, and nearly had a heart attack. Sitting at his desk, wearing a pressure suit with the helmet off and resting on the table between them, was Ahsoka Tano.
"Hello, Senator," she said pleasantly. "I hear you wanted to talk."
Chapter 25.
"How did you get in here?"
Bail said the first thing that came into his head. "R2 opened the hatch for me as soon as he got on board," Ahsoka said.
"I should have him deactivated," Bail said with no real heat in his voice. "He is far too independent for a droid."
"He had a lot of bad role models," Ahsoka said dryly.
That's true, Bale said. Though Skywalker was your teacher, too.
I was talking about Senator Amidala, actually, Ahsoka said. R2 belonged to her first.
Where's your ship?
Bale asked, changing the subject to avoid the sudden tightness in his throat.
Hidden on one of the lifeless rocks in this system. I knew that I'd be too small for the scanners to pick up, unless someone got very lucky looking out a window. Ahsoka glanced at the helmet. I'm surprised I found one that fit.
Why didn't you just come with Chargery Tage? Bale said. Save yourself the hassle.
In my position, it's difficult to trust someone who employs a tractor beam before a hello, Ahsoka said.
I take it you didn't tell them who they were after?
No, said Bale. I wanted to preserve your anonymity. I didn't know it was you until I saw the surveillance footage.
R2 was supposed to wipe all of that, Ahsoka grumbled. I think you might be right about his independent streak.
It's difficult to look for people without compromising their safety, I've found, Bale said. The new order is harsh and unforgiving, so I thought if you didn't want to be found, I would give you the option.
How did you even know where to look? Ahsoka asked.
I keep an eye out for acts of kindness in this new galaxy of ours, Bale said. When there's a concentration of them, I try to find out who is behind them, and then we have a talk.
What do you want to talk about? Ahsoka asked.
Bale gave her a measuring look and decided to go for it.
The rebellion, Padawan Tano, he said. I look for people who will fight against the Emperor, the Empire, and everything it stands for.
I don't deserve that title anymore, Senator, Ahsoka said quietly. And I don't deserve your trust.
Bale let her sit on that statement for a few moments. Politics had made him good at getting people to talk.
There was a planet, she said finally. A moon, actually. I tried to help them when the Empire came, but I couldn't. People died. I had to run and leave them behind.
Ra'eda, he said. I heard about that and what you did there.
We tried to fight, and everything just got worse, Ahsoka said. It's not like the Clone Wars. I was never alone then. I had an army. I had masters. I had...
She'd had Anakin Skywalker.
You can't fight the Empire alone, Ahsoka, Bale said gently. But you don't have to, either. You can fight it with me.
I can't command people anymore, she said with a shake of her head. I can't order them to their deaths. I've done that too many times.
We'll find something else for you to do then, he said. I have a lot of job openings, as you can probably imagine.
He could see that she was very tempted. It would be safer than continuing to right wrongs on her own. Whatever was chasing her would have a harder time tracking her down.
There are children, she said after a long moment. His blood ran cold. All over the galaxy. I've met one, but I know there will be others. They would have been Jedi. Now they're just in danger. Something is hunting them down. I don't know what it is. I've never seen it. But if you will help find it, I will join your rebellion. The casual way she had talked about Anakin and Padme made him think that she might have known the true nature of their relationship, but not the outcome. He was sure she didn't know about Leia, about the boy. She couldn't know his motivations, but he would overturn every stone in the galaxy to help her, if it was in his power to do so. Having someone else lead the search would work out well for him, too. Every layer of deception between him and anything connected to the Force was another layer in the safety net he was building for his daughter.
That seems like a bargain to me, he said when his voice came back. And I have a mission for you, as it turns out. Are you up for it?
Ahsoka was exhausted, though she did her best to keep it from showing in her face. The fight with the Black Sun agent,
her escape from Bail's hired hands, and then her trip through zero gravity had drained her.
It was taking everything she had to stay upright behind the desk while she and the senator traded barbs, then words, and finally got down to negotiations. When he said he had a mission for her, she almost wilted, but she had been awake this long, she could manage a little longer.
"I might need a meal before I head back out," she said, "but I'd like to hear about anything you think I'd be interested in."
"It's on Raeda," Bail said. Ahsoka felt immediately sharper. "My contacts in that sector have been getting spotty information for a long time. That's part of why it took me so long to find you. But then this, as clear as starshine."
Ahsoka held out her hands, and Bail handed her a data pad. She flipped through it as Bail continued to talk. It was mostly maps and diagrams of the Imperial compound, things she already knew. "It seems there's a new sort of Imperial agent there," Bail continued. "Non-military, but powerful. He has complete control over the garrison if he wants it, and orders the officers around like they were stormtroopers. All of this is made more complicated by reports that he carries a double-bladed red lightsaber."
Ahsoka nearly dropped the data pad. It was getting too easy to surprise her. She needed to refocus, but she couldn't seem to find something to focus on.
"What does he look like?" she demanded.
"The overwhelmingly common descriptor is gray," Bail said. "Not terribly helpful, I think. Even the security footage doesn't reveal very much."
Ahsoka's mind turned it over quickly. Gray was not the sort of word anyone would use to describe any of the adversaries she was used to facing. This had to be someone else, someone new, someone like... "A shadow?" she asked. "Gray like a shadow?"
"I suppose," Bail said.
"He's rumored to be very fast, and he must be a force wielder to carry a lightsaber, don't you think?"
"Not necessarily," Ahsoka said. "But it's probably true in this case. The Empire wouldn't send just anyone to hunt down Jedi."
"How do you know he's hunting Jedi?" Bail said.
"Don't you think it's a little strange that your intel was so spotty on Raeda until now?" Ahsoka said. "Until I started drawing attention with my acts of kindness, as you call them? Until whatever this creature is was drawn away from the whispers he was hunting to follow bigger prey?"
"I didn't know about the last part," Bail said. "But yes, I did think it was strange. Also, there's something else you need to see. I thought it was just a trap set for anyone, but now that I've heard your side of the story, I think it might be a trap set specifically for you."
Bail picked up the data pad that Ahsoka had dropped and thumbed through to the final entry. It was a picture taken by a security camera and beamed out across the stars to be decrypted by Bail's agents. But it was astonishingly clear for an accidental transmission. Knowing that it was a trap made the clarity make much more sense. Ahsoka took back the data pad and looked down at the picture. Her heartbeat sped up, and she felt like all the oxygen had been sucked out through the very airlock she'd used to get into Bail's office. There was the gray creature, his face obscured by a helmet, but his lightsaber plainly visible. And there was Caden Larty, obviously his captive, with her broken arm bound tightly to her chest and her frizzy hair flying in all directions.
"Oh, no," Ahsoka breathed. "I have to..."
"Stop," Bail said sternly. She froze automatically and then glared at him. His expression softened and he came around the desk to stand close to her.
"Ahsoka, you need to rest. You need to plan. They're not going to hurt her anymore. They need you to show up first. The best thing you can do is make sure you're as prepared as possible when you do."
She slumped back in his chair, hands falling into her lap in defeat. He reached out to put his hand on her shoulder, and they both jumped when there was a clamor outside the main door of his suite. It hissed open, and Captain Antilles burst into the room with several security officers.
"Senator!"
Antilles said, and then stopped. He took in the room at a glance and dismissed the security force.
"Everything is under control, Captain," Bail said.
"This is a friend of mine.
She's going to be with us for a while. We'll need to pick up her ship before we leave, and she'll need quarters.
Antilles nodded sharply and then left as quickly as he'd arrived.
You didn't tell him who I was, Ahsoka said. Are you really that vulnerable?
Yes, Bail said. But we're getting more secure every day. Still, I don't like to give away other people's secrets. If you want to tell him who you are, that's up to you.
Thank you, she said. Then, you mentioned quarters?
Bail showed her into the suite next to his, and then went down to the cargo hold to make sure her ship was being secured. Ahsoka cleaned up, stripping off the pressure suit. She'd had to leave her bag in the ship, but the little package of tech parts fit next to her skin inside the suit. She opened it now and made sure everything was still intact.
As if you could break any more than you already have, she said. Then she turned her attention back to getting dressed. She debated for a moment between food and sleep, but the latter required less effort, so she lay down on the bed. She was asleep almost instantly.
Ahsoka dreamed of ice, and an urgency she hadn't felt in years. She had to make it back to the mouth of the cave while the sun held the ice back, or she'd be trapped on that frozen planet for much longer than she wanted to be stuck anywhere so cold. But where was her crystal? Master Yoda had been no more helpful than he usually was, telling her only that she would know it when she saw it. But where was it? And how would she know? She stopped running, closed her eyes, and thought about what she did know. Master Yoda was strange, and more often than not, she didn't understand him. But he was almost always right. She would just have to trust that he was right now, and that she would find her crystal and she would know it when she did. She opened her eyes. There, twinkling in the dark of the cave, was a light that hadn't been there before. It called to her, and she went to it. When she got close, she saw that it was a crystal, and just like Master Yoda had said, she knew it was hers. It fell into her hands, and she turned to run back to the mouth of the cave. It was warm in her quarters when she woke up, which is how Ahsoka knew the dream was over.
"Thank you, Master," she whispered, though she knew that Master Yoda couldn't possibly hear her, or help her even if he could.
Rising, she went to the low table that held her belongings and picked up the little pouch that usually rested in her pocket. She spilled out the collection of used parts and other derelict pieces she'd been carrying with her since her arrival on Ra'eda. She could see now that several of them were useless, and she discarded them. The pieces that were left, however, might be worth something. Lightsaber construction was a Jedi art of the highest order. Ahsoka had never done it unsupervised, as she knew she must do now. She also knew that she was missing important components, but since her vision was guiding her toward Ilum and the crystals that grew there, she would have to trust the path she was taking. The materials she had would be sufficient to begin construction on the chambers. The hilts would be inelegant, but functional. She finished after a few false starts and examined her work. She could almost hear Huang fussing over her shoulder, but she still felt pleased with herself. She stood, stretched out her shoulders, and went in search of the senator. She found him in the mess hall, having a conversation with the captain.
"No, Captain, stay, please," she said, when Antilles would have left them alone. "I think I'm going to need your help, too."
"What are you thinking, Ahsoka?" Bail asked.
And Ahsoka told him the plan.
The crystals grew, clear as ice and cold, until they found the hands that waited for them. They added structure in an ordered way, one prism at a time. And while they grew, they waited. From time to time, someone would arrive and call to them, like the harmony of a perfect song. Each crystal had chosen a bearer, and only that bearer would hear the music and see the glow. All others would pass by, seeing nothing but more ice. There were larger crystals, visible to all, but inert unless properly calibrated. And there were tiny ones, the size of a fingernail or smaller. Even the smallest could channel power and find a bearer.
All they had to do was be patient and grow. There was no particular pattern for where the crystals might be found. There were some planets that hosted them in countless numbers, and those places were often considered holy or special. Pilgrimages were made, and lessons learned, and lightsabers crafted, and thus the light crystals went about the galaxy to be put to use. Dark crystals were made too, but not in that holy place. They were plundered from their rightful bearers and corrupted by the hands that stole them. Even rock could be changed by the power of the Force, bleeding alterations until their color was the deepest red. The balance was finely staged between the two, light and dark, and it took very little to upset it. When the first ships appeared in the sky over a planet where the crystals grew in number, nothing seemed amiss. Ships visited the planet all the time, and crystals were taken away. But this occasion was different. There were no young bearers to hear the songs, no attentive students to learn the lessons. There was only greed and a terrible, terrible want. The planet was ravaged, its crystals broken by uncaring hands who thought to twist them to their own uses. No more could the planet be considered a holy place, and no longer would pilgrimages be made. Instead, those who had once gone there would avoid it and despair for the loss of the crystals that once sang to them. But in the wideness of the galaxy, there were many planets and many places where the crystals could appear. They would be harder to find, their concentration lower, but it would not be impossible for one who sought, for one who listened, for one who had learned the first lessons and had the patience to learn more. The crystals grew, adding structure in an ordered way, one prism at a time. And while they grew, they waited.
Chapter 26. Bail offered her a ship, but Ahsoka turned him down. Everything in his manifest was new, sleek, fast, very obviously built on a core world. Ahsoka elected to keep her own craft. She knew its foibles for one thing, and she also knew it would stick out less on an outer rim world than any of the fancy ships in Bail's collection. She did let Aunt Tilly's crew fix the engine damage, though. Well, she let R2-D2 do it while she supervised. While the droid worked, Ahsoka took the opportunity to examine Bail's operation. He'd said that not everyone on board was fully aware of what he was attempting to organize, but it seemed like everyone at least knew that what they were doing wasn't entirely Empire business. She could tell from the conversation she overheard that the crew was loyal to Alderaan and to Breha and Bail themselves, which was a good start. Bail's work was slow, as he'd said, but his foundation was strong. Of course, it helped that he had more resources than she'd had on Ra'eda, and that the people he was working with were already trained to fight and follow orders. Sitting in the hangar bay with R2-D2 by her side, Ahsoka began to realize that what she had accomplished on Ra'eda was more of an achievement than she'd thought. It wasn't like Onderon, where she'd had time, and most important, Rex to help her. She hadn't failed on Ra'eda, even though her people had suffered casualties. She had learned a new way to fight too, and she needed to have as much patience with herself as she did with the people she fought alongside. R2-D2 beeped a question at her, and Ahsoka examined his work, even though she had a feeling they both knew he didn't require a second opinion. "It looks great, R2," she said. "I've missed having you around for exactly this kind of thing." The droid chirruped happily and made a few last-minute adjustments to the engine. It hummed to life, and Ahsoka jumped to her feet. "Thanks, little guy," she said. "I don't know if it's ever sounded so good." R2-D2 made a smug sound, set the tools back in the crate, and rolled off without making any further comment. He passed Bail, who was walking in Ahsoka's direction. The senator was off that day as well, on a mission no less dangerous than hers. He was headed back to Coruscant to play Imperial puppet in the Senate, and he was dressed for the part.